Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
If you take the mood of the early Cold War era, the duck and cover era that sort of came out of the World War II optimism, and that tension between like the imminent and potential destruction of the entire world and the absolute extravaganza of consumerism that were both going on in the early 50s, you take that vibe and then you move it conceptually 100 years into the future, where nothing socially has really changed, but we also have lasers. And you also like take that world that feels familiar, but now because we've introduced sci-fi elements, it isn't exactly. Then you destroy it and you layer on like all of these post-apocalyptic tropes that have been like so classic ever since, you know, media started considering, well, what would happen if the end of the world ended? So there's all sorts of influences in there that are classic from like the Twilight Zone episode where like the nuclear war happens and the fella like who's a misanthrope breaks his glasses and that's the end of his good times and his empty world that's only him now. That's so old as far as like how we think about nuclear war now. But there's a consistency and a through line as to like what are the emotions around apocalypse, like what is the aesthetic of apocalypse, and like there's sort of an Americanism in post-apocalyptic media that Fallout really embraces. Like the duck and cover era was so unique and so strange, and I think, like, to modern eyes, it seems like a very silly and naive era, which it kind of is, but, like, maybe we've just sort of gotten used to the apocalypse to the point that where the idea of, like, this looming over us being new just doesn't, like, rate anymore. Like, it's interesting because Fallout sort of, like, reconnects us to that time where, like, the idea of apocalypse was just as strange and freewheeling and anything goes as anything else.
This is one of the reasons that I really connected with it when I did, like, as a young man, because I felt like it helped me understand my parents, because they lived with that in a way that I did not. I was born in 1983. Like, we have Abel Archer, and then things kind of really start to calm down. And by the time I understood what was possible with nuclear weapons, it felt like the threat was over. Obviously, we live in a much different world now. But, you know, finding those Fallout games and seeing that reflection of that anxiety and that the architecture and seeing kind of the world of the future perverted, it really helped me kind of understand my parents' fears and anxieties. And that's really one of the reasons that I connected with, especially like 1 and 2 early on.
Yeah. No, 1 and 2 were more interactive with the anxiety of it than the absurdity of it.
Yes.
Well, Fallout 1, Fallout 2, plenty absurd. Anyway, I was born in 88, so after you, so like I have even fewer actual memories of the Cold War. Like when did the Berlin Wall fall? I must have been like...
Okay, this is just not right. first of all, okay, I was born in 71. It fell in 89.
I was waiting for you to chime in.
Yeah. I'll just sit here and shut up now. But
no,
I am. Damn young whippersnapper.
Well, I am curious about, like, the history of, you know, somebody born in 71, the history of your nuclear anxiety, such as it was, and then when did you find fallout?
So that for me, nuclear anxiety was the kind of thing that kept me up at night, and I wasn't the only one. I actually did have one duck and cover drill in my elementary school. I actually had to get down under a desk, which is so ridiculous when you think about it. I have no idea what that desk was about to do for me. Yeah, it was so real, so present, all the time. Fallout, I think, actually let me play with those fears, too. I mean, it reminded me of, like, actually, in some ways, I have a more optimistic view of it, which is, this is going to sound probably pretty silly, but Fallout, some version of the world survives. I mean, you know, as opposed to absolutely everybody being dead, it's just like Monty Python once said, mostly dead.
Yes, I really agree with that. I mean, there's a huge tone difference between Fallout and, like, McCarthy's The Road. Like, The Road is, like, truly, truly one of the bleakest and most emotionally affecting pieces of post-apocalyptic media I've ever read or seen. Like, the film version is so beautiful also. But, like, it postulates a world that has truly died, but Fallout does not.
Yeah, it's a new world. It's a brave new world. And actually, in some sense, the optimism of the old world that's been destroyed kind of carries through, I think, a little bit. And, I mean, just because it makes you laugh, the bobbleheads and the videos that, you know, you break into and that are just like those, you know, videos from the 50s. They're just so, you know, the instructional videos. Right? I mean, just so much of that embedded in the games that you're actually laughing your way through the apocalypse and the wasteland, you know? It's a very weird thing.
The soundtrack carries a lot of that, definitely. Like, the really bright poppies, 40s, 50s tracks that they play just underline it completely. And, like, I shit on Fallout 3 a lot, and it's not my favorite game, but, like, they, more than Fallout 1 and 2, really united the world and that era of music through, like, their radio selections and Tree Dog the DJ. Like, I'm pretty sure in the show they brought back the track Let's Go Sunnin. And, like, that one is just, like, so perfect. Just the way that the lead singer, like, delivers that, like, pretty flowers need the sun, and this applies to everyone. Like, you know, everyone just needs to be happy, and everything's gonna be fine, and don't even worry about it. And, like, the contrast between, like, that attitude and, like, the world itself, and, like, the whole character of Lucy in the show, like, operates on that contrast, right, of her okey-doke optimism and then everything that she has to goddamn do out in the wasteland.
She's such a perfect protagonist for a television show. Really just incredible. Like, I can't stop thinking about, as a fan of, like, the entire franchise, you start watching that show and I get a couple episodes in and I'm like, oh, the people who made this have played all of the games. I'm getting like obviously there's a really huge attention to visual detail that comes from the Bethesda stuff, right? And they obviously worked very closely with Bethesda to make a lot of that happen. But so much of the tone and the attitude and the lore, which we'll get into a little bit later, is like, oh, this is, like, we're talking about Fallout 1 and 2 stuff here. And it's really typified in Lucy, who is this vault dweller, Jason, who has to go out into the wasteland and chase a MacGuffin, typical Fallout. And she's got, they cast Ella Purnell, who's got these giant, naive eyes. And she has, like, a very 1950s attitude towards everything and is, like, really game for anything and believes in the golden rule and then goes up into the wasteland and has, like has to interact with it and still try to retain that sensibility as she pushes through increasingly terrible scenarios. So three, I assume, was the first one you played, Jason?
Yeah, you're right. I went back and, played around with the others, but yeah, I really fell in love with three.
And you live in DC now.
Yeah, which I didn't at the time. But now I just go, wow, you know. And it makes sense that Bethesda because they actually were, I don't know if they still are, based in Bethesda,
which they are,
is right
yeah.
outside They're DC, still there. Right? Still there. So, they know the district. They know the area down cold. And it's really interesting to just put those memories together with what I drive around every day.
I think I would say that is one of the strengths of the ones that Bethesda has developed, is their ability to capture real-life places and then turn them into a post-nuclear nightmare world is really impressive. I think especially 3 and 76.
When I went to Boston to do the real-life landscapes of Fallout for the East Coast one, so I did 76 and 4 and 3 at sort of the same time in the same two-week period. And the way that they shrunk the downtown to scale in Fallout 4 is really wild. Like the pedestrian experience of like walking from one end of downtown to another end. Like I took one day where I went from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and I did like 14 total miles of just like walking around the city. And it felt incredibly consistent with the sort of distances and the sort of impression of a distance that I had from Fallout 4. Like it's definitely more obvious when they get the big landscape going, when for like Fallout 76 or Fallout 3. But Fallout 4, even though it has like a thinner urban focus, is actually like equally, if not more skilled at doing that act of sort of translation between an actual place and a video game.
The beauty of 4 to me will always be going to the top of one of the skyscrapers downtown and stepping outside and being up and seeing the whole landscape before me and the sound design, like the creaking and the wind.
Yeah.
Just an incredible feeling that they've built. So I want to backtrack here a little bit. Can you give me what was your first Fallout, Noah?
Fallout 1. I got a CD version of Fallout 1 when I was 12, and I had like kind of a weird, complicated, unpleasant home life at the time. So it was the first like adult role-playing game I'd played, like adult in that it assumes that you want to make heavy choices and that there's like consequence behind what you do, like a game that like treats you, the player, as an adult. And like that was an incredible revelation for me because I felt like very small and very powerless in my own life. And so in this game, like I could not only like project onto this other character, like I could build them out and build out their personality in a way that was really, that felt personal. Like going back to Fallout 1, a lot of the quests are sort of binary in how you're able to solve them. And there aren't nearly as many quests as the later games, but like even still within that more limited format, like the feeling of personal freedom and player self-determination was really powerful to me. And that's sort of like, as much as the setting, what got me into it.
At 12, did you have much sense of like the nuclear anxiety aspect, or was that all just kind of background stuff?
Well, I was raised by old people. So like I was adopted, but it was an open adoption. So my adopted parents were like in their late 40s, early 50s, like when I was born. So they had all sorts of things around the house, like older appliances. They had like all of these globes that were still labeled with the Soviet Union. So I grew up surrounded by like artifacts of this time that like other kids didn't have in their homes. And so Fallout in a certain way, like made me make better sense of sort of like the depth of time and like the difference in time between generations, because like my parents were sort of like one generation down the line from like most other kids in my school.
I just want to say that I have a globe from my dad, and it actually has Siam.
Oh, wow.
And Persia and Africa without a single independent nation. They're all colonies. And yeah, as far as I can figure out, it's not dated, but I think it's 37.
Wow.
Anyway, it's one of my treasured possessions. So anyway, sorry to break in with that. But
no, not at all.
No, I think that that's – there's something about this franchise in particular that helps connect people to like a weird imagined – a weird American past that didn't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was this dream of the 50s that we that in the 60s that gets leaned on in this country that didn't actually exist. And Fallout supposes that it did, and it went on for 100 years. Yeah. And then at the end of that dream, America started resource wars to keep that dream going.
Yeah. And
it went really bad for the world.
That's one of my favorite cynicisms of the early titles, is the idea that the consumerism was always unsustainable. It just took a whole century for it to get to its like terminal point.
In what ways would society twist in that 100 years, right?
Yeah.
One other thing that's really interesting about it is when you're talking about resources, they don't ever come up with the transistor. You're still using, like vacuum tubes and nuclear power. They've really miniaturized nuclear power all over the place. It's pretty wonderful for that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never miniaturized electronics at all.
I love that bulky look, though. Like, the sound of that older technology is really something, too. Like, the sound of vacuum tubes warming up is just something that you could never get in a digital age. Like, there's so many like markers of physical analog technology that like I miss. Like growing up with like CRT televisions and hearing like the clunk and then the fade in while the tubes were warming up. Like having that in radio with vacuum tube radios. Like I was such a Fallout fan that like I one of my first purchases for a home apartment when I turned 18 and moved out on my own was to get a tube radio off eBay. Like I was obsessed. I wanted one. I needed one.
There's that hum you don't get. Right. That's at the, isn't that the beginning of 3, or maybe it was the trailer when the announcement.
It's the intro to the bus radio that pans out into the broken street.
So what do you think of the show?
I loved it.
War never changes. That's all for this teaser, Angry Planet listeners. If you like this, if you want to hear another hour of us talking about Fallout, please go to angryplanetpod.com, kick us $9 a month, and you will get instant access to that episode right now. It's up right now. It's been an hour and 20 minutes talking with Noah Caldwell-Gervais all about Fallout, not just the TV show, but kind of diving into our memories of the Cold War, nuclear anxieties, why it's resurgent, what works and what doesn't about the franchise, and you know, just the first of some bonus content around the Fallout franchise, which is something that a couple of listeners have asked us for. There's going to be another one probably in the summer. We're going to be talking to a wonk. I'm excited about that. And we've also got other bonus episodes up there now that you can listen to, kind of an explanation of who these weapons capabilities, some in-depth stuff about Haiti, and we will have more bonus episodes for you next week and for the rest of the month and throughout the summer. Again, that's at angryplanetpod.com. Sign up, $9 a month. You'll get an email explaining how to hook up the RSS feed to whatever your favorite podcast reader is, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.